Okay. So can we work out? So what we're going to do is we're going to get through Nirtz Hashem Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. But let's just chazer a little bit what we're up to. The Mishnah, which is really a Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, so is discussing sleeping under a bed inside of a sukkah. And I mentioned two things to you that have to do with the bed. And then number one, it doesn't seem to be very high. And number two, it's not really a tent because the covering that's that bed is not really meant to cover anything. It's meant that you could sleep on top of it. So it's like under a table. Under a table, under a bed are not like a typical thing. Wouldn't normally call that a tent for those two reasons. Number one, because it's very close to the ground, although a table would be higher. And number two, because it's really not meant to be an ohel that separates between the person and anything above him. You're meant to use the top of the table, the top of the bed, not things that are underneath it. So for those two reasons, one could have argued that whereas other types of situations we've spoken about in the past, all kinds of beds would be problematic, tents and whatnot. But in this particular situation, we're talking about under a bed or maybe even like under a table, so maybe that would not be a problem. So Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says, what are you talking about? We used to sleep under the beds in the sukkah in front of the Zakenim, and they never said anything. So obviously, it's fine. And that's what the Gemara zeroes in on, is this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara ends up quoting a Machlokes Tanoim, and says that if you have, in terms of Tumah B'Tahara, so we're leaving the world of sukkah for a minute, and dealing with Tumah B'Tahara. In terms of Tumah B'Tahara, we know there's Machlokes Tanoim. That one opinion is that anything which at the end of the day is some sort of covering, some sort of oihel, has a status of being an oihel. But Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says it has to be an oihel that was made by man. And if it was naturally occurred or not made by man in one way or another, then it does not have the status of an oihel. How does he know such a thing? There's no such, what, there's a svara for that? Is there some kind of svara? So the Gemara seems to say no, it's not a svara. It's a pasuk. He has a gzeri shava that he learns from Mishkan. Just like when they made the oihel, which really means the curtain, you put it on, didn't come on its own. So too, anytime you're making a quote-unquote technical oihel, it has to be that the person made the oihel. It can't be that it just came about somehow on its own, not made by man. So Gemara says, huh. So if you're talking about a bed, it was made by man. Although it wasn't made for that space underneath it exactly, it was really made for the space on top. But at least it was made by man. So, what is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? And the Gemara says, well, remember that whole thing with Parah Aduma? And they had all these kinderlach, and the kinderlach were born, bred, and raised in this very unique chatzer that was built in a fashion that it should not be susceptible to any form of Tumas Meis, and therefore all of the children were completely tahor for Tumas Meis, and they would be able to draw the water for the Paraduma, and there would be no issues of Tumas Meis in the production of the Paraduma. And there's a machlekes there over, and again, Rabbi Yehuda, over whether or not they put some kind of board on top of the ox that the children would ride on to go draw the water. And Rabbi Yehuda says they didn't use the board. They just rode on top of the oxen. And the Gemara has a whole discussion about that. What exactly is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? Should they not use the boards? Is there something bad about the boards? Or is it just not necessary to use the boards? And the Gemara says one opinion is that it wasn't necessary to use the boards because Rabbi Yehuda allowed the children simply to ride on the oxen because the oxen have these big bellies. And why shouldn't the belly function as an oihel? So Gemara says, bellies functioning as oil? It wasn't made by man. We're not talking about an ox that they made with a Sefer Yetzirah or something like that. Nobody made this ox. It was made by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So what if he cloned it? I don't know if they cloned it and made it. It's made by Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that belly, how in the world can Rabbi Yehuda hold it? It's an oil. Rabbi Yehuda is the one that holds an oil has to be made by man. So Gemara says, well, Rabbi Yehuda's shita really is that if it is only a tefach, very small oil, so then that has to be made by man. But once it's larger than a tefach, so then that already, at the end of the day, that's an oil. You can't argue with that because it's larger than the shear, and therefore it is considered to be an oil. The Gemara refers to it as an egroif, as a fist. So that, the Gemara assumes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, once you have a shear of an egroif or larger, even Rabbi Yehuda would be moideh, he would agree, he would admit that is considered to be an oihel objectively, even if it was not made by man. So now we understand why Rabbi Yehuda allowed the children to ride on the backs of the oxen, or the shvarim, because the belly apparently is big enough that it should be an oihel, even according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Why would we ever have a case such as a oihel being like small than the side of the fist or something?
What?
Why do we ever have a case of an oihel being like small than a fist or something?
A tefach. Once you have a tefach, you know.
But that's like...
barely smaller than a fist.
Huh?
It's barely smaller than a fist. A fist is like an extra thumb. It's really not so significant.
It's like this maybe. So like, who has an oihel that's this big? Like if it's like a...
No, not like an oihel, like a tent. Like, you know...
It's like
you know,
a space. Like a...
an overhang, a branch. Any of these things could be considered to be a technical oihel that would carry to space wherever it goes. Okay. The big issue by cemeteries, theoretically, is that the branches...
So if it was bigger than a tefach, it would then, regardless, would be considered an oihel. That would be a good thing, no?
Once it's bigger than a tefach, yeah.
Right. If it wasn't, it have to be man-made?
Correct. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. I think we assume a tefach, that an oil has to be a tefach. But I don't think we care about how it came about.
So the only problem you have is that less than tefach, you have to... and if only if it was man-made, it would be an oil. If it wasn't, it could carry...
Right, so I don't think... I don't believe we pass it that way. And the tefach that we discuss is usually the height of the oil, not the width of the oil.
Right, right,
but
right.
I think it's the width as well at the end of the day. I don't know, I have to check it out.
We're going to have a branch sticking out only a tefach where there's too much space.
I think it's both points. I think it's both points. It has to be both the width of a tefach as well as the height above whatever it's above, or above the ground, a tefach.
But if it was a tefach, like less than a tefach off the ground, but it was much longer than a tefach,
then that would not have it in oil, because there's no space for the oil. It has to be at least a tefach.
Right.
Okay, so the Gemara and the top of Chof Aleph Amid Beis said that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that you don't need the boards, according to Rebbe, was a different idea. That because children all have ADHD, all children, so they're not going to sit still on the board. They're going to think that the board is so much fun, and they're going to think that the board is, you know, prevents them from having any problems, and they're peeking over the side, and they're surfboarding on the board, you know, the whole thing. So they're having a grand old time. We're afraid they're going to stick things off, their arms off, their heads off, whatever, and they're going to end up becoming tamei, perhaps, with kever tehoim. So it's much better to just have them ride on the back of the ox, where they're not going to be, you know, doing anything funky on it, and that'll be better for them. But at the end of the day, Rabbi Yehuda holds that because the ox has this big fat belly, that it will be an oihel. It will serve as an oihel. It is large enough, but even though it's not man-made, it will still be an oihel. And the only question that the Gemara dealt with, and this is where we finished yesterday, was what exactly is Rabbi Yehuda's problem with the board? What's going on over here? So that's machlokes by Rava. Rava's conclusion is that it's just a practicality that we're afraid that the children are going to be playing games and end up getting themselves into trouble. It's better not to have the board. So this is good parenting 101. That is it better to, you know, have your children you know, just do things normally or give them something which is unusual, which will keep them better behaved. Okay, in any case. So Gemara asks, Vahari Mita, the Yesh Bakama Agreven. But wait a minute, let's go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah has a case of the bed, and Rabbi Huda's opinion is there's no problem sleeping under the bed. Why? But a bed has several fist breaths, is that a word? You know, hand breaths. So it has a lot of Agreven, it has a lot of room. So shouldn't Rabbi Yehuda treat it as an oil? If the belly of an ox is an oil, why shouldn't the underneath side of the bed be an oil? What is going on over here? But now that we learned in the Mishnah, this is just to flesh out the question. Rabbi Yehuda, Oimer, no, I get my inner shahinu yishayim tachas amita. We used to sleep underneath the bed with Nehazikainim in front of the elders, and they didn't say anything to us. That was Rabbi Yehuda's way of saying there's nothing wrong with sleeping under a bed in the sukkah. Everybody see where we are? There's a, in my Gemara anyway, there's a dot. 8 lines down. That's where we started. So there's in the middle of that line, 8 lines down, it says, Vahare mita, diesh bakama groifim, but behold a bed which has in it several fists. But dinana, we learn in our Mishnah, Chafa Medbez, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, again, I, you know, our custom used to be, Shahayinu, that we would Yeshenim sleep Takasamita under the bed, Vifnei Azakenim, in front of the elders. Period. The end of that quote is, and they didn't say anything to us. They didn't tell us that that was improper or inappropriate. We weren't Yotzei the Mitzvah. So obviously that's okay. So the question that the Gemara is asking is, why is that okay? Being that Rabbi Huda should agree that that is 100% an Oyel. And first the Gemara, Shani Mita, a bed is different. Hoyel Ulagaba Asuya. Because it is made, Asuya, it is made Ligaba. You know what Ligaba means? Al-Gav, on the back. It's made for the back, or more accurately, the top. So what does he mean? So that was the other point that I made to you yesterday, and I said again today, that that is an interesting difference when you're thinking, just pondering, right? It's great to ponder. Pondering is the best. You open your mind to all kinds of ideas. You say to yourself, there is a difference. All the cases that we've been dealing with until now of beds that have canopies and all those kinds of things, but they're made to be tents, to cover the bed. Here's the first time we're actually talking about something where you're underneath something, but it's not really made to cover you. It's made to be a bed. And a table would be the same thing.
So we're kind of bringing like that. We're like adding that adaptation to whatever you said. Not only must it have, but also the intention of the building also has something to do.
I wouldn't say intention necessarily, more of a function. But the function here is for the top, not for what's underneath it. Because intention means that there's someone that made it. But Rabbi Huda's maskim, that even if nobody made it, it's naturally occurred. So then, still it would be an oyel. So at the end of the day, this is certainly an oyel. The answer is no, but with seer, there's a function to it. The function is the thing that's on the top.
So if I put a bed over somebody that died, sort of stop it from going up, would it be considered right now? Putting on the top up. So now, if it is it not oyel by sukkah, but it is oyel by tumah?
Well, that is a great question. From the Gemara, you get the impression that there's no distinction. But that's a very good question. So the Gemara has a question. The Gemara does not ask your type of question because it's like an information question. The Gemara is always interested in contradictions and caches. So the Gemara's question is, wait a minute. Did we have a case that we just brought up where Rabbi Yehuda holds something that was really its function as the top, but he allows it to function as an oil underneath? Was there anything like that that we mentioned? How often have you used the belly of an ox to shade yourself or to park yourself underneath and use as an oil? What is the function of this oil belly of an ox? So let's think about this for a minute. Why is it considered an oil? Because if you would hollow out the ox, you know, it's got a spine and it's got this rib cage and it's got leather on top. And it's a tent on top of whatever it's on top of. And the kid is riding on top of it, which is fine, but the oil is preventing whatever's underneath it from rising up. So why is that an oil? The answer is because it's got a spine and a ribcage that's big enough to be considered an oil for whatever it's on top of. What do you mean? But the whole function of the axe is to ride on it or to pull a plow or something, right? So asks the Gemara, Shvarim Nami, oxen also, Ligabon Asuyim. Their physical structure is really for the top, for their backs, not for their whatever's underneath them. It's interesting, like if you would have like the animals aren't made so that they can create some sort of shade or protection underneath them. The animal has a physical structure so it can carry a load, it can carry a burden. It's interesting. Like, you find this interesting? Because like, what are you talking about? At the end of the day, like, you know, it's a funny thing to say anyway that an ox is considered to be an oil. He doesn't have a hollowed out belly. It happens to be it's very wide. Okay, it's a very wide belly. So it is a kind of big space that is a heel over something. But is there really a functionality in an ox? An ox is an ox is an ox. What do you mean there's a functionality in an ox? So I don't know how much we want to make this into a hashkafa point, but one certainly could. How so? When we look at the world, so you see animals, but you also see functionality. What is the function of an ox? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu create an ox?
Yeah.
The answer is for man. And for what use for man? Either to carry burden or to be able to pull the plows that the oil is used for. So that's the function of an ox. We've discussed in the past that our amygdala is orange. You know, it starts off green, you don't notice it, it turns orange because Hashem wants you to notice it, it has a nice smell, it doesn't have to have a nice smell, but Hashem wants you to notice it. And then it has this vacuum seal, you gotta peel it off, but on the inside it's not the same color as on the outside because Hashem doesn't care that you notice it, it's just there to keep it protected. The orange is on the outside, so you'll notice it. Functionality is reflected at every stage of it. And then you pull it apart, and you start eating it, it's so yummy, and then this thing's hard as a rock inside, what is this? Pit, seeds, you spit them out, and that's what, of course, grows the next one, and they have no color, they have nothing to them, they're just hard, because that's exactly, every stage reflects the functionality of the item. So that's l'chor inherent in this Gemara, that the animal, the ox, is l'gaba asuya, not by man, but by God, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu made the ox for its back, not for what's underneath it. So that's a kasha, what's the kasha? So how can we claim the Rebbe Yehuda would allow people to sleep under a bed? Because in order to say that you're allowed to sleep under a bed, even though it's big enough to be an oihel, you have to say because the bed is not made for what's underneath it, the bed is made for what's on top. So if something is underneath an item that's made to put things on top, then that's not a tent. It's not an oihel. Are you with me on that? So the kasha of the Gemara is, what do you mean? But that's an ox. An ox is made for what's on top of the ox, not under the ox. But Rabbi Huda holds that the ox is an oil that prevents tumah from rising up to the children riding on the back. So we have a kasha, we have a problem. A steer interview. Kiyasu Ravin and Rabbi Elazar. When Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he said in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Sha'ani Shmarim, oxen are different. Hoyel and Meginim, Al Haroyim, Bachama, Mibne Hachama, Rabbi Gishamim, Mibne Hagishamim. Very good. Shani Shvarim, Shvarim, oxen are different. Hayil sins. But Meginim, they protect Al Haroyim on the shepherds. Bechama in the sun, Mipnei Hachama, because of the sun. But Begishamim and in the rain, Mipnei Hagishamim, because of the rain. So I don't know, I haven't really done too much shepherding, but apparently, when it gets very hot, you go under the biggest ox. Lots of shade there. I don't know, I guess they don't sit down so much. And when it's raining, and it's pouring, and you want to stay dry, you park yourself under the ox. Again, I don't know, I guess that's what people do. One of the functions that Kadosh Baruch Hu made, the big fat oxen, was that they should serve also to get out of the sun, out of the heat. But so what?
Dangerous,
yeah. I mean, I don't know, they don't sit down so much. How often do oxen sit down, or like?
No, just like if they move or something.
So that's what Rabbi Elazar said. You have to do some research and ask the shepherds. Yeah, and what if like they gotta go?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Maybe not best place to be. I don't know. Anyway, maybe the females are better. I'm not sure. Anyway, but that's what he says. So there is a functionality to the big fat oxen underneath as well, because the shepherds actually do that. They use the oxen to get out of the heat and out of the rain. Okay, so we've made a distinction, as unusual as it sounds, that the oxen also, the functionality of the belly is for underneath it as well.
If so, mitanami,
the bed's the same thing.
Why?
Because it protects on the shoes and the sandals underneath it. We've all done this, right? Where do you keep your shoes? You keep your Crocs, you know, under your bed, next to the bed. But sometimes if it's, you know, if it's the weather, you're not sure if it's going to rain or whatever, I don't know exactly. But you keep it under your bed. Keep things under your bed. Don't put food under your bed. You know this? You know you're not allowed to eat food that's been under your bed that you slept on, right? You know this?
Yeah?
No? You heard this before? It's a heebie-jeebie thing. Yeah, it's not something that's, you can prove in the natural world. But somehow spiritually it's the negativity to food that is kept under where you sleep. It's a camp problem, right? A lot of times in camp, people like to keep their snacks and things under the beds. So that's serious shit.
Yeah.
Because
you didn't have anywhere else to put it. Like,
right.
If you just had like bags of food and like you didn't have like cubbies or whatever, it's just like, or maybe you don't want to put it in the same place as all your clothing, so you just throw it under the bed.
Yeah, so people
need water problems.
To drink?
Yeah, if it was
to drink, yeah. Not washing water, but drinking water.
No, to drink water, but you know.
Yeah.
Why is washing water?
I think that even though technically speaking,
like,
it needs to be drinkable. I can look it up and see if anybody invalidates washing water. Also, I don't have a feeling that.
I remember talking to Remy about this, and he told me there was a difference though between something that, like, beer or something, like an alcoholic beverage, and like water. I don't remember why.
Under the bed. Oh, really?
I don't remember. I should look it up. I don't remember.
Okay.
Something, but. Yeah.
Well, if you do, let us know. Okay, so what just happened in this Gemara? It's interesting because the Gemara didn't know originally people kept things under the bed sometimes. Now the Gemara just suddenly remembered, oh yeah, I kept my sandals under the bed. What just happened? So do you feel it? Do you know what just happened in the Gemara?
Yeah.
Can you explain it? So the Gemara started off by assuming there's basically a primary use to something, and incidental uses are irrelevant. And then the Gemara comes back with, but how does Rabbi Yehuda say legitimately that underneath the shore is an oil? So you have to say that incidental uses are also significant in the functionality. So then the Gemara shoots back, okay, well then there's no different than keeping your shoes and your sandals under the bed. So that's what just happened. So now we're back to square one. So what's the kasha? So the kasha is, what's going on? How could it be that Rabbi Yehuda will allow someone to sleep under a bed? And Biyote, it should have been a tent. You can't argue anymore that the functionality of the bed is only on top. Because there's an ancillary function, there's an incidental function, maybe, where do you want to use a sometimes function? For under the bed. So, the Gemara says, I'm a Rava. Shani Shvarim, acting are different. Hoyo Vasiyim Lahagin, Obanim Ayim Shalahan. Since the functionality of the actual Oyel, Hoyo since, Vasuyim, they are made, meaning the spine and the rib cage, and you know, the skin, I guess, included. Lahagin, to protect, Obanim Ayim. On the intestines, shelahan of them. And then it quotes a pasuk. Shenemar. Oyer basar tal b'sheini. Leather, skin, and flesh you will dress me in. Uva'atzomis v'gidim t'seich echeini. And with bones and sinews, you, from the word schach, you cover above me. What just happened here? So the Gemara is saying that you're right. It can't be that it's the issue is like the ancillary function. We have to go back to primary functionality. Because once you talk about incidental functions, you have to say you keep stuff under the bed too. And this distinction of the bed clearly is that it's made for the top, not for what's underneath it. So then where is the distinction lie between a bed and a shore? If we're not talking about incidental things. So the Gemara answers, I don't know, maybe this is obvious from the beginning, I'm not sure. Is that the functionality of the ox is on the one hand for man, but on the other hand for the ox, because the whole point of the rib cage and the spine and all these kinds of things are protection for the intestines and for the insides of the animal. If it didn't have a rib cage, if it didn't have that spine and the ribs that come off of it, so as soon as it would get bumped, it would have internal damage every single time. So the rib cage, clearly the functionality of it is that it protects the insides. Even Paul Ryan, I mean, that saved his life, right? Yeah, he got beat up by his neighbor mowing his lawn, remember? Just a couple of weeks ago. One of the guys that was running for president of the United States, he has a neighbor, and apparently they don't get along very well. No one really knows exactly what's going on here. But he was mowing his lawn, and the neighbor came up to him and, like, beat him up. Broke six ribs. Some of them apparently got cracked and almost pierced internal organs. So he had to miss his, was he a senator, or what is he? So he had to miss work a little bit, you know? Listen to
wow.
Shabbos. Anyway, so the pasuk says, "Oru basar tal b'sheini, with skin and flesh you have dressed me, you've clothed me." I guess it's a better translation. You've clothed me. Uva atzamos v'gidim, and with an etzem are bones, atzamos bones, v'gidim and sinews. Tesoichecheini, you have covered me. But tesoichecheini comes from the word schach. It's the same word. So what do you see from here? That's talking about a human, by the way. It's not talking about an animal. So we're using that as, you know, it's self-understood. Well, I don't know. Let's try to talk it through a little bit. What happened in the Gemara? The Gemara says, okay, it's not that sometimes shepherds use it for shade. That's not good enough. That's too incidental. You can't say that a Kadosh Baruch Hu or the function of an ox's belly is for shade from the sun or protection from the rain. So then, how does it ever know, y'all? And it's just because you see that the functionality of man's bones and sinews is to protect the inside of his body. And if that's the functionality when it comes to man, so for sure that's the functionality when it comes to an animal as well. What was there, like a chiddush on that? So it may go back to what you were saying, Josh, that on the one hand, an animal is made for man. So you'd expect that every part of the animal, the function is for man. But apparently that's not exactly true, that it has functionality for itself as well. So the functionality for the animal is to protect the animal. And the animal ultimately is to serve man. But still, it's made in a way that the animal is protected from the elements and from other animals and from danger and whatever. And so that's part of the way the animal is constructed. And so that is considered to be a function of its physical structure, is to protect its insides as well.
But maybe you can say that it protecting itself is protecting itself for you.
Yeah. Ultimately, it's for man. This is partial also, right? When Mesil Sasharim brings a whole bunch of proofs that the whole world was created for man. And so he said, quotes from the Medrash, that Yaakov Avinu gathers all of his stones, right? And he puts them around his head, because everyone knows that if you want to protect yourself from animals, you take a bunch of rocks and put it around your head. Don't try this at home.
Well, there's like a SpongeBob episode.
Yes.
There's like this thing, it's like called like a bear fish or something like that.
Yeah.
And they create like a circle of rocks, and then they stand inside the circle, and the bear fish can't attack them if they're standing.
Because it's not able to swim up.
There you go. So that's they learned it from Yaakov Avinu. That's based on Yaakov's Mishparsha. So when Yaakov Avinu takes a stone from there, so everybody says, what do you mean, a stone? It wasn't one stone. It was several stones. What do you mean he took the stone, Ashur Sam, he put around his head? It wasn't a stone. It was many stones. So the Medrash explains that when Yaakov Avinu is collecting stones to put around his head, they all started screaming out, "Oh, I want to be the one, I want to be the one." You know, when the magician says, you know, who wants to be a volunteer? And all the kids go, "Bee, bee, 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 bee." And that's what the rocks were doing. All the rocks were screaming out, "Me, me, 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 Allah, I want to be the one that Tzadik's going to use as a pillow." So, it's not fair. So all the rocks became one rock. And that was the rock that apparently he used as a pillow or whatever for that night. So Mesil HaSasharim says, what in the world is going on here? Rocks don't fight with each other. Rocks don't volunteer for magicians. What is going on? What does it mean? So he says that what the Chazal are trying to tell us is that the entire world is screaming out, metaphorically, I want to be used for the tzaddik. I want to serve the tzaddik. Because the world was created for man. And therefore, the whole Bria, so to speak, screams out, I want to be used by the tzaddik for a mitzvah in his avodas Hashem. So that's one of the proofs for, you know, for this whole idea. So ultimately, all of the world is there to serve the tzaddik, to serve man, specifically the tzaddik. And nonetheless, it's also made to protect the animal itself, just like my man. And therefore, that's considered to be a function as well. Okay, but in any case, so that's... So the bed is different because the bed's functionality is not that, because you can't argue that underneath the bed is made to put things under the bed.
Right.
So it's not true.
On it, right?
Yeah.
The ox is meant to keep things inside. So it's not
right.
The shade. So back to our original question.
No, right? No. So it's made to protect all of that. So protection and shade is all the same thing. And any time that you have a covering that's made to protect that which is underneath it, that's a noya.
You're saying the top of it, because there isn't...
Until now, we've been assuming you ride on the back of the ox, or you put things on the back of the ox. Now we're saying there has to be some functionality to underneath the spine and the rib cage. But what could it be? Shade and rain, that's not good enough. So the answer is because underneath all of that is all of its insides. It's protecting all of the insides.
See, I agree, that's fine. But when you have a bed, right, it's a regular bed, you have stuff that goes on top of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't like compartments. It goes on top, that's why it's not moving stuff at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to an ox, it has a rib cage as well as a spine on top.
Mm-hmm.
And now everything's kept inside this area.
Underneath.
So if you're talking about this is now everything underneath the shade, what about this part? This part's meant to keep things up, not down. So you have like a compartment, and then you have... You know what I'm saying?
You're saying the belly and the bottom should be an oil mafsik between...
Yeah, no, this shouldn't be an oil, because here I have like a compartment. This is fine, because I keep things inside. But there's a bottom rib cage as well. That bottom doesn't keep things down, it keeps things up.
Okay, that's an interesting svara. You want to say... But that's meant as... That's not really an oil. It's a blood. Okay, I don't know. Okay, I hear you. Arguing. It's an interesting point. Not sure. So that's the Gemara's conclusion. So according to that, it should come out, Menachem, like you were saying originally, according to Rehuda, a bed
should actually not be an oil mafsik. We don't pass him like that, but that may be Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay. Viva Yisayim, and if you want to say, Rabbi Yehuda Letame, Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his normal reasoning, Damar, Sukkah Diras Keva Ba'inan. So if you remember, this is a complicated issue. If the very, very, very beginning of the Masechta Beis Amud Aleph, so the Gemara had a whole discussion about what exactly is going on with the Srach Lamala Me'esrin. Can Srach be higher than 20 Amis? And Rabbi Yehuda says yes. And that's what we're discussing, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says yes. And there is an approach in the Gemara that the problem with Srach being above 20 is that it requires, it necessitates a keva sukkah. Do you remember this? Because it was what we would have to be made out of a real solid material. Apparently, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care. Why not? So here the Gemara is saying, because Rabbi Yehuda actually holds sukkah is supposed to be keva. A sukkah is supposed to be keva. Okay. Sukkah there is keva ba'inan. Sukkah we want or need or ideally or at least it's possible to be a diras keva. But Rabbi Yehuda views a sukkah as a diras keva. V'havale meet the diras arai. And everyone agrees that a bed, if you will consider it to be an oihel, right? So this would be different than what we said until now. Until now we said there's a distinction between a bed and other things because a bed is made for the top, not underneath. Now we'll go back to where we started from. Oh, come on. It's kama grifin. It's many fists full. And therefore a bed also should be considered to be a tent according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, let's say it is a tent. So then how are you allowed to sleep under it? So the answer is now, because a sukkah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, has to be a diras keva. And a bed, for sure, is only a diras arai. It's only considered to be a temporary type of structure. Because a bed, first of all, it's portable, you move it, you don't use it, how long are you going to sleep under it? It's a temporary dwelling. It's a temporary type of tent. The sukkah, read it one more time. Rabbi Yehuda Letame. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his regular reasoning. Amar who holds, because he says, Sukkah diras keva ba'ina. A sukkah is a diras keva. We need it to be a diras keva. V'hava le'mita diras arai. And a bed is a diras arai. So what? So you can't. Let me ask you a question. If you sleep in a canopy bed in your house, is anybody going to say you're not in your house? Of course you're in your house. No. You're in a canopy bed. That's a house inside your house. That's ridiculous. It's a bed. It's a bed in my house. So if the tent, that's the sukkah, is just like a not very significant type of tent, so you'll say you're in a house inside your house. But to the extent that the sukkah on the outside is of great significance, it's a fixed structure. It's a very permanent type of structure. We can close the door if you're freezing.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, the crosswalk. So just close the door. No, so just we can just close the door for a bit, and if it gets hot, we'll just open the door. So, yeah, okay, so let's read the whole phrase. Sukkah diras keva ba'ina. V'hava lemita diras arai. V'sukkah oil keva. So the bed is considered to be a very temporary type of dwelling place underneath the bed. And the sukkah is considered to be an oil keva. It's like a set, a fixed tent. V'le'asi oil arai. It does not come along a temporary tent. Umevatel and nullify oil keva, a permanent tent. So this is a svara. So how do you make sense out of this? What does the Gemara have in mind? What do you think? How do you... So this is a svar. The question is, how do we make sense out of the svar? There's something called a tent in a tent. So at a certain point, we're gonna visualize you as in some sort of structure that is its own structure independently, and you're like really not in the other structure. And at a certain point, we're gonna view it as that, you know, that's absurd. You're just in something inside your sukkah. So when have you removed yourself from being in the sukkah by being in something else?
So it's a little bit hard to understand. It definitely requires explanation. But apparently, if you view a sukkah as a diras arai, and you have to ask yourself, what does that mean exactly? It's the actual physical materials. Is Rabbi Yehuda going to insist that people actually build their sukkah walls out of like stones? Like, what does he mean exactly? So it's a little hard to understand. But nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda is insisting that, and it's only Rabbi Yehuda, that's why this is so curious. Because apparently everyone else holds that a sukkah is a diras arai. So if you hold a sukkah is a diras arai, then you will hold that a bed is a problem. But if you hold a sukkah is a diras keva, we're envisioning a sukkah as like a real solid structure. It's like a house. So to put yourself into some flimsy structure inside your house, no one's ever going to view you as like not in your house anymore. You're in the thing in your house. So that's what the Gemara answers. You can't have a diras aroi be mevatel a diras keva. You're for sure still in the sukkah according to Rabbi Yehuda, because he views the sukkah as a diras keva. It needs teeth. The svara needs stronger teeth, right? You need to work it out a little bit better. Yeah, but that's what I was pointing out a minute ago. Is that in that Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda holds a sukkah can be lamala miyasrin. The first Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Yehuda has not a problem with that. So there were three opinions, right? One of the opinions was that the problem with the sukkah being lamala miyasrin is that it necessitates the entire sukkah structure being a diras keva. And we require diras arut. Well, then how can Rabbi Yehuda allow it to be higher than 20? Teretz is because Rabbi Yehuda holds it has to be diras keva. So if he holds it has to be diras keva, so it sounds like he requires you to have like a very solid structure. And once he requires you to have such a solid structure, you can't be mevatel, a solid structure, by being in a little flimsy, you're under a bed. I mean, come on. You're still in the solid structure. But if the structure would have to be very flimsy, and you're in a flimsy structure in the flimsy structure, okay, so then maybe that invalidates the outside structure because you're in the flimsy structure on the inside. That's enough to invalidate it. And that would be the mainstream opinion. But Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that a sukkah is a diras keva, you can't have this flimsy thing invalidate your yeshiva sukkah. I don't feel the svar in my kishkas. I can hear it, but I would never argue it. So I feel like I'm not really, I don't really have it clear in my head. So if you have a good way to touch it, let me know.
Well, what classifies as a tourist arrival? Like, what classifies as a flimsy? Like, if I'm in a teepee inside my structured house. Yeah. People live in teepees outside. They're not structured, but they're livable. Like, people do that. So is that considered where do you draw the line? You have to define it. But I hear you.
Yeah, so there's some line between keva and arui. So what defines keva and what defines arui?
Yeah. All right. Okay, so then we ask a question. V'har Rabbi Shimon, do'omar nami sukkah diras keva ba'inan. But Rabbi Shimon also says that a sukkah is a diras keva. But he holds v'asi oyal arui. Mavadu oyal keva. But he holds that you're not allowed to sleep under a bed. Right? Because this is the machlokes in our Mishnah. After Rabbi Yehuda says, we used to sleep under the bed b'fnei hazikenim, the next line in the Mishnah is, Amar Rabbi Shimon. Ma'ase v'tabi avdo yishorim gamliel. So the Rabbi Shimon is the one that responds. What are you talking about? That's the whole thing that we learned from Gamliel, is that Tobi used to sleep under the bed. So apparently he's an Eved, he's butter from Sukkah, and so it's not a problem. But it's a problem. That's why he slept under the bed. He was so smart. So what do you mean? And somehow the Gemara knows that Rabbi Shimon holds that a Sukkah has to be a Diras Keva. And nonetheless, the bed is Mavatal, the Diras Keva. So what is going on over here? Now, how would you answer this question? If I would ask you, Rabbi Yehuda holds that one way. And I would say, what do you mean? But Rabbi Shimon holds the same way. So that's not such a strong kasha. Because you could have two people that hold of something but disagree about some element of it. You only have a real kasha. And by the way, what word would the Gemara use if it had another source where Rabbi Yehuda said that the bed invalidates the sukkah?
that a diras aroi does invalidate a diras keva. It would use like an urminhi or kasha Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda. There's a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. But just because you found another opinion who happens to hold similar to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not the strongest question in the world. Do you know what I mean by that? Because sometimes the Gemara will say, I mean, okay, very nice, but Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are not the same person. You know? They don't have to hold the same thing, which is ultimately what the Gemara is going to do. So Gemara says, Oba, Vaha, Rabbi Shimon, Damar Nami, Sukkah, Diras Keva, Ba'ina. Rabbi Shimon also holds that Sukkah has to be a Diras Keva. But nonetheless, you see from our Mishnah that he holds Vasi Oyal Aroi, comes along a temporary tent, Mavato Oyal Keva, and can be Mavato, the permanent tent. Because he says that the bed is problematic. You cannot sleep under a bed in a Sukkah. So Gemara says, in or doesn't have in, whatever the Girsa is, Gemara says, Baha Pligi. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon argue over Baha the following. Baha and this, Pligi, they argue. Mar Savar, the master holds, Asi Ola Roy, Mavato Los Keva. Rabbi Shimon holds that comes along a temporary tent and nullifies a permanent tent. Umar Savar, and the master holds, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, Loy Asi Ola Roy, Mavato Los Keva. That an oil that's temporary does not come along in Mavatel, a permanent one. So in other words, there's a machlokas here in Svara. When do you argue that a person that's in a very flimsy structure is considered to be outside? He's not considered in the other structure that he's in. You have a permanent structure, you want to call it a house, and you have a kid playing in a play tent inside the house. So on the one hand, you'll say, come on, this is a house. He's playing in the tent. He's not in a tent. He's playing in the tent. It's a joke. On the other hand, the tent he's in is legitimately a tent. In Hilchos Tumah, that would be a real tent. So how do you then view that? Do you say that all we care about is basically the dimensions of the structure? And in terms of the dimensions of the structure, it's an oil. It's nothing to talk about. And therefore, he's considered to be in a tent inside the sukkah, in which case, he's not in a sukkah. That would be Rabbi Shimon. Or do you say, no, it's absurd. You can't say that you being in a tent in your house is in a tent. You're in the house. It's a game. You're playing. It's a joke. And that would be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So that's the end of that discussion in Gemara. Gemara finishes up with something very, very interesting. Gemara says, the Mishnah told us, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Ma'ise b'tebi avda. And we have a brisa. Tanya. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said, right, this is like another version of this quote. In our Mishnah it says that, what's the lashon of our Mishnah? That, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Ma'ise b'tebi avda Shimon Gamliel. There's a Ma'ise Shahaya with Tebi Ramon Gamliel's slave. The brisa has a slightly different presentation. Where Rabbi Shimon says, "Misichasay shel Rabban Gamliel, lamadnu shnei devarim." From the sicha, how do you translate sicha? So you know, there's a what?
Conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know the Hebrew, but I thought maybe Aramaic.
So there's a fascinating Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Remember this one? Al tar besicha im ha'isha. Don't have too much conversation with the woman. Now, the woman, I should have said with women. Al tar besicha im noshen. What's im him ha'isha? Who's the one woman? The queen? What? Yeah. So that's the Mishnah says. It refers to your wife. Al tar besicha im ha'isha. The woman. The one you're married to. And then the Gemara said, the Mishnah goes on to say, so if it's referring to a person's own wife, how much more so you have to be very careful about the wife of your friend and someone else's wife. So what's the pshat in the Mishnah? So hold on a second. What's the pshat in the Mishnah? So it's interesting. So the Mishnah doesn't say don't talk to your wife. The Mishnah says don't have too much sicha with your wife. The implication is, you're supposed to have sicha with your wife, but not too much. Wait a minute. So what does it mean? Practical conversations? You're not supposed to talk to your wife about who's going to pick up the kids from carpool? What? Sam says, no. Any conversation that has a practical goal in the conversation. So of course, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how you figure things out. You can talk to anybody. There's nothing wrong with that. Sicha, right, Josh, is what you were saying. Sicha is not just conversation. Sicha means bantering. women, the Gemara tells us, there were these 10 portions of Sikha that came to the world. You know, 9 out of 10 go to women or whatever it is, right? What does it mean? Women love to schmooze. Men, most, don't really like to schmooze. Okay.
A hawk is different.
Good. Hawking is different. Men are, generally speaking, more functionally oriented. In other words, most men have conversations because they want something. So the conversation is rooted in, what do I need from you? What do I want from you? And the truth of the matter is, if you haven't spoken to a friend of yours in years, and, okay, maybe years not, but in some time, and you say to yourself, oh, he's got whatever that I need. So would you first contact him as if you're just schmoozing with him? And then the next day, call him back and ask him for the thing?
Yeah.
You would?
Depends.
Not really.
He's like a friend of mine.
Yeah, an old friend. Yeah. So most men, I think, would do that.
Like that, yeah.
Women would never do that. Not a million years. It's insulting. They would first call up and schmooze as if, you know, the next day call back and you know what? You know, nothing to do with my conversation yesterday at all. But I remember, I need this. So what's the difference? The difference is that by women, they engage in conversation because they need relationships. Their life revolves around relationships. Men are much more tachlis oriented. They're interested in getting whatever they want to get. And this is a conflict a lot of times between husbands and wives. Because wives need to schmooze. They need to schmooze with their husbands. And the guy's like, I don't have time for this. I gotta get to work. You know, like, what do you want? What do you want? She doesn't want anything. She just wants to schmooze with you. Because that's how she creates her relationship with you. And she's talking about her day, and she's talking about it, she's blabbing away, and you're just rolling your eyes like, I really don't care. I really don't care. So, that's a bad husband. Okay, I'm clapping al-khayt right now. You know, because we're tachlis-oriented. We're not interested in this. But that's how she creates the relationship. She schmoozes. That's how women do it.
Although, like, a lot of times, men, even with their best friends, you don't necessarily need to ask them everything or get involved in all their personal business and all their relationships and have all these conversations. I don't experience it. My best friend in the world, like, sometimes I don't talk to him for months, and my mom will ask me, oh, have you heard from him? Have you heard from him? I'm like, no. And she's like, well, how come? Like, aren't you guys friends? Like, is he, I'm like, yeah, he's my best friend in the world, but, like, we're busy, and, like,
right.
I don't need the validation from him that we're texting back and forth every single day or every, you know, few days, like, that we're still friends. Because, you know, every once in a while, I still get a text from him, or I text him, and, like, he's like, oh, you want to come here? You want to come out? Like, you know, and we always talk to each other whenever we have a problem about something. But.
Right. Some men are like that. So that's an important thing to know. That by women, there's something called sikha. And sikha is very, very important to them and for the way that they do things and the way that they forge relationships. And they should always remember that. Whenever your wife is schmoozing with you, you got to pay attention because it means she's trying to foster your relationship. And for you, it's like, I don't understand what this is all about. And that's part of our training as men, is to be able to become sensitive that relationships are important and that's how you foster relationships. Fine. The Mishnah says, "Atar b'sicha ima isha." You can't have too much sicha because it's a waste of time. And men have to go learn Torah, and men have to do mitzvahs, and all kinds of things that men have to focus on. But not at the extent of your relationship. So you gotta have sicha. But al tarbe simcha isicha imha isha. But you can't have too much of that because that'll take you away from the things that you need to be doing. But you have to have some sicha imha isha with your wife, not with Eishes Chaveru, not with somebody else's wife. That's bad. Because to start having a relationship with someone else's wife, or she's having sicha with you, ay ay ay, that's no good. And the Mishnah goes on to say, sofa yerish gehenim, that's going to lead to very, very bad things. In fact, you know that story that Bruria, Remeir's wife Bruria, says she was walking, she's going to go shopping, or she's walking on the street, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi the Galilean, so he was walking down the street, and he didn't have a GPS, so he stopped to ask for directions, and Bruri was right there. So he asked her, do you know which is the way to get to Lud? She looks at the guy and she says, you stupid Galilean. Don't you know what it says in Pirkei Avos? It says, Altar Basicha Ima Isha. He should have said, Ezoi Lulud. Which goes to Lud? No, excuse me, pardon me, how are you doing today? Which way goes to Lud? Too many words! What? He wasn't having sicha with her. He was asking for directions. But she was giving him musr. You're one of the tzaddikei ador. You're Rabbi Yosef Lili. You need to be careful with every word you say. You don't say, excuse me, pardon me, how are you? You don't do that. I'm somebody else's wife. You don't do that. You say practically, which talud? That's it. So that's a very high madriga. That's what she was telling.
So where does, like, the seals of Shana come into play when you're supposed to care about how the person's going to take what you're saying? So, like,
he should have known that this is Brewer he's talking to. This is Mayor's wife.
I would never, like, just walk up to a person and just, like,
look at the floor.
A random person. Like, yeah, like, a random person and just, like, say, I would say, like, excuse me, like, you know, sorry for bothering you, but, like, I would never just, like, excuse me, how do you get to this place? Or, like,
correct. So nowadays, that would be considered disrespectful, and it's not the way you behave. So you have to do certain things that are, you know, in accordance with the place and the time.
Right. Even like when you walk up, like to, like when you're in a store, you don't like first you don't say, "Let me get this, let me get that." Like you always say, "Oh, hi, how are you today?"
Right.
Even though it's a very cliche thing, and no one actually.
But that's why it's okay. It's okay because it's cliche. But for you actually to go up to somebody else's wife, you know, look her in the eyes and say, hi, so-and-so, by calling her by her first name. How are you doing today? So that's us.
But if it was a woman, that would be awesome.
It's us. Because what are you doing? First of all, you're not allowed to call her by her first name because calling someone by a married woman by her first name is trying to invoke a personal relationship with her, which you shouldn't do. You should keep a distance. You should create a certain mechitza between you and other people's wives. It's really, we live in a world where it's a different place, you know, everybody goes by their first name. We need to keep mechitzas between us and other people's wives. It's important, you know?
So, like, if you're having, like, dinner with another couple or something, or you invite them over for Shabbos, you're not supposed to associate with the wife at all?
I didn't say that. You can have, you know, practical conversations. That's fine. Sometimes you want to know about all kinds of things that are very practical to you. That's not called sicha. But sicha means you're almost flirting with her. You know? It's not a necessary conversation. Like, why are you talking about that?
Is this more of a private thing where, like, if it's just you and her?
Then for sure it's a bigger problem.
So it's more like, it's not really so much a problem if your wife is there because you wouldn't be flirting with her right in front of your wife.
That depends on the person. I know people, oh my gosh, I know a certain guy that used to like flirt with other women. And one day his wife came home with him, and as soon as they got back to the house, she took off her ring and she threw it across the room. She's so mad at him. He didn't need posh, he thinks that that's just the way he talked to people. That's the way he was raised. That's the way he grew up. And she was so incredibly offended. I'm sure they had many conversations before about this, you know? And like he just doesn't hear it, just doesn't get it. You know, and she felt it was a violation of their relationship.
Where is the line of being like, because there are people who have like different opinions, and, like, you know, some people just like, I see the way some people talk. Some people talk because that's how they normally talk to everyone, including men. It's not that they're being vicious, it's them being.
You're talking from the side of the woman or the side of the man?
Side of the woman, really.
So, you know, our responsibility when the woman is talking to us is, you know, to try and make sure that she doesn't realize what she's doing because she's doing the sicha thing, you know? Mm-hmm. She's just making a conversation with you. But from our perspective, if we know that it's really not something I should be doing, so then you respond, you know, politely, but you don't, like, continue it. You don't, like, you know, then shoot back and say, like, oh, well, what about you? You know, like, you can answer the question. You should be respectful. But you're not obligated to further the conversation and further the sicha. Yeah.
But then, like, at the same time, like, when they ask about you and all you do is answer questions and you don't talk to them back, it's like it would be somebody might say, oh, isn't he rude? He never wants to speak to me. He never wants anything to do with anyone else.
So, you know, it depends. These are the kinds of things you have to evaluate and know on their own. You know, when you're dealing with religious people and they understand where it's coming from, so obviously that's great. When you're dealing with people that really don't understand, so you gotta balance it the best you can. I agree. It gets complicated. But that's the Yisod. Yisod HaDvarim is something called Sicha, and that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. What does that have to do with us? So the Gemara says, fascinating, that the Brisa's presentation of this is that from the so this Brisa is basically the continuation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Rav Gamliel reported the Maaseh Shehaya, and in the Brisa says, and Rav Gamliel, sorry, and Rav Shimon made a comment based on that Maaseh. His comment was, Misichasli Shurman Gamliel, from the Sicha of Raman Gamliel, Lamadnu Shnei Dvarim, we learned two things. Lamadnu Shavuadim Pedurim Min HaSukkah, we learned that slaves are putter from Sukkah. Vilamadnu Shayashin Tachas Amita, and we learned that one who sleeps under the bed, Lo Yatzei Rechavasa, is not fulfilled his obligation. That's a quote of the Brisa. Asks the Gemara, V'leima mitivarav shem Rama Gamliel. Why don't you say from the words of Rama Gamliel? Why didn't you say from the sicha of Rama Gamliel? So what was Rama Gamliel saying? What was Rama Gamliel saying? Do you remember what the Mishnah said? Amar lahen Rama Gamliel zakein. Gamliel said to the elders that were there, Risam tebi abdi? You saw what Toby did? He's a Talmud Chacham. And he knows Avadim are putter from Sukkah. That's why he slept under the bed. Why did he say that? Why is he complimenting Toby?
He's trying to make a point.
But it's not like he was like, you know, he's proud of him. Yeah. Proud of him. That's what it sounds like. So that's why Rishimun calls it Sicha. So the Gemara says, why do you call it Sicha? Why did you say it from his words? Why do you have to say sicha? Sicha almost means like a negative, like he's like schmoozing for no reason. Like, what? Why are you calling it sicha? Say it from his words. It's okay. V'leima mitvarav shem Rav Gamliel. Why let him say from the words of Rav Gamliel? Why does someone have to say from the sicha? Milsa gavurcha kamashmalan. It was teaching us something. By the way, right? Milsa means a word. Agav urche means, how do you translate derech agav? Derech is by the way, agav of the back. Incidentally. He was in the backside. How do you translate this in normal English? Tangentially? Not, I don't know. He was tangentially teaching us something. Milsa, a thing, agav urche, by the way, kamash malan, he was teaching us. So whoever it was, Amar Rav. So whoever ultimately goes back to whether it goes back to Rav or doesn't go back to Rav, bottom line is, the statement was, Minayin sha'afilu sichas talmid chachamim sicha limud. How do you know that even the sicha of talmid chachamim requires limud, requires focus and examination? Shneimar v'alehu lo yibo. And his leaves will never, I don't know what, fall off or whatever it is. Rashi writes, V'aleihu davar kal shebo, even though the most insignificant things, you should never ignore. So what's going on over here? So Gemara is making an important point, that when you're dealing with a person who's a serious Talmud Chacham, it goes back to what we were saying yesterday, you know, about people that like don't waste their time. A serious Talmud Chacham is careful with all of his words. And even when he's saying a compliment, even when he's saying almost something that sounds like it's a joke, it's really not. Because in his mind, he has an idea, and he's packaged it in a certain way. And he says it in a certain way. And so when you're dealing with real Talmid Chachamim, you should pay attention to even the way they present themselves when they're making sicha. That's the point. Which reflects that you have a person that's really conscious of what he's saying, the way he's saying it, even when he's just schmoozing. And that was what Rav Shimon wanted us to understand. Let's just finish this last piece. It's a very short Mishnah and Gemara. Mishnah says, "Asami sukkas mikoy amita sheira." If a person supports his sukkah with the legs of the bed, it is kosher. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, "Yimein yuchal lamed b'tnei atzmo psula." If it can't stand on its own, it is pasul. So what's the case? The case is like this. You have one of these poster beds. We're not talking about a canopy. It's just a bed that has these four legs that stick up, you know, probably very high above the bed. I think they have a picture here someplace. Yeah. So, I don't know. It sounds like a picture. I don't know if you can really see it. But here they have a picture basically of a bed. It looks like it's inside a sukkah, but it has four posts. It's a four-post bed. So the bed basically is so high they can lean up the walls of the sukkah against it. Now, if you're leaning up, these walls of the sukkah against it, the walls of the sukkah don't stand on their own. They're only standing up because they're leaning against the posts of the bed. So that's the case. The case is, Hasoymeh sukkah, one who leans up the walls of his sukkah, and you have to talk about his schach as well. Bikroy amita with the legs of the bed. Ksheira, Tanakama says it's fine. If the walls, maybe the schach, can't stand on its own, so then it is puzzle. My time at Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda? Why do you need it to be an independent standing structure? It's a machlok between Rabbi Zera and Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo. Chad Omar one said the reason why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like it has to be an independent structure is mipnei because she ain't la keva, because it doesn't have any, is nothing fixed about it. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda was one that we just said requires a diras keva, the sukkahs with diras keva. So if you have a bunch of panels that just lean up against something else, that's not called a diras keva. It's no good. V'chad Omar, the other one said, no, the reason Rabbi Yehuda holds it's no good if it's leaning up against the bed. If this is leaning up against something which is susceptible to tumah, so what? So apparently, if you're supporting your walls, your schach, with something that's makabel tumah, that's a problem. Whoa, who ever heard of that? My beinayu, what's the difference between them? Kengonchiniyat shpudin shel barzel. A person stuck into the ground these iron spits. So he has these poles made out of iron, made out of metal. And he sticks them into the ground. You know, four poles sticking out of the ground. And he puts schach on top of them. And now there's a bed that's, you know, supporting, I don't know, the walls or whatever is underneath it, you know. But it's not relevant because the schach is standing above it. In other words, you have the bed. And you have the structure of the bed that maybe even creates a kosher sukkah, maybe. Maybe it's 10 tefachim off the ground, whatever. But the bed itself is creating like some sort of wall structure. But the schach itself is not supported by the bed. The schach itself is supported by these poles that are around it. And the schach is basically just a canopy. So you've got your walls due to the bed, and you've got your schach due to the poles. It's according to the one that holds the problem of being so meich your schach and your walls. Is that it's not considered a fixed or permanent harayesh lakeva. Well, in this case, you've got these metal poles fixed in the ground, so you've got a very solid structure for your schach, at least. Not the walls, but the schach. But the one that holds the problem of leaning your schach against the posts of the bed is that you're supporting your schach with something that's makabel tumah. No, these are metal poles. That's also makabel tumah. Hare ma'amid b'davar makabel tumah. So you didn't solve any of the problems by making this canopy for your schach, because the schach is being supported by metal poles, which are makabel tuma. Am Rabbi Elishanu Elisamach. We only learn here when a person leans, supports the schach by the bedposts. Havasichech al gav amita. But if he was putting his schach on top of the bed, ksheira, it's kosher. What? My time. Well, what's the reason? Laman demar lefishen lakeva harish lakeva. Laman b'neishem mamid, but demar makabel tumah. When all the problem is that he's supporting the schach, something's a makabel tumah. Harein mamid, but demar makabel tumah. He's supporting it with something that's not makabel tumah. What? What just happened over here? So you have to fill in a blank here, according to Abaye, that sichach al amita. Rashi writes the last Rashi here. V'loy samach asichach b'kroyim elagavi yaseidos. That Abaye meant to say, instead of using metal poles, you use wooden poles. So if you use wooden poles to support your schach, so these wooden poles are not makabel tumah. It's a little funny the way the Gemara says it. Definitely a sukkah in an ella matzav shoshadin lepasul Rabbi Yehuda. But the walls of the sukkah, so then even though they're only leaning up against the bed, so then he wouldn't say it's pasul. The halagamrina and psul minei lesukkah. Because the problem is not the walls as much as it is what's supporting the schach. So it sounds like Rashi is saying that according to Abaye, we don't need metal poles to hold up the schach. It's good enough to have wooden poles holding up the schach as long as it's not being supported by the bedposts themselves. Because the bedposts themselves would be a davar makabel tumah. So, fine. So what happens at the end of the day over here? So you have a machlokas and a mishnah. If a person supports his sukkah with the bedposts, so it's a machlokas if it's good or not. There are two issues here. There's the walls and there's the schach. So initially it sounds like you're supporting the walls with the bedposts. And Rabbi Huda holds it's no good. And we're wondering if that has to do with this idea that a sukkah has to be a diras keva. But when all is said and done, it sounds from the Gemara like it has nothing to do with the walls. According to Bayi, for sure, it has nothing to do with the walls. It all has to do with the support of the schach. That if this bed, you're putting a schach on top of the posts of the bed itself, that apparently, according to Rabbi Huda anyway, is a problem, because you're supporting the schach with the wood of the bedpost, which is a makabel tumah. And if you use iron poles, so then it depends on what Rabbi Huda thinks the problem is. That also is a problem if you hold you can't support it with a davar hamakabel tumah. So, but the other approach is...
But if you use wood, you're good with both, no?
Yeah, so apparently that's good enough to be considered keva because it's being supported by an independent structure other than the bed. So that would be good even according to Rabbi Huda. If you use four wooden poles, then you'd be good to go. But if you use four metal poles, then it depends. On the one hand, it is keva, but it's mekabel tumah. So which was the point that Rabbi Huda cared about? That's what we're not so sure about. Is it the keva or is it the mekabel tumah? So the Gemara here is not so conclusive what the story is in two directions. Number one, what is the issue? Is the issue keva or is the issue mekabel tumah? And number two, do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda or we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? Like, does this really matter? So I don't know how much you guys want to go into this, but this is a huge topic in Hilchos Sukkah Halacha Lamaisa. Because the issue in this Gemara is, can you support your schach with something that's mekabel tumah? This is what we call mamid. Can you support your schach with something that's makabel tumah? I don't know if you noticed this, but even people, it's a practicality really, but it's more than that. It may be a halacha. Sukkahs that you guys have, raise your hand if you have a sukkah made out of wood. Raise your hand if you have a sukkah made out of fiberglass.
I don't know.
Raise your hand if you have a sukkah made out of canvas. No. What are you guys' sukkahs made out of? What else is there?
The walls are plastic.
Okay, fiberglass, plastic.
You're talking about the walls?
Yeah.
So
some people have canvas sukkahs. Canvas sukkahs are made out of metal poles, and the canvas is attached to it one way or another. Other people have fiberglass sukkahs, like the lighter sukkahs, whatever you call them, that they snap together, so they're metal frame with fiberglass, and whatever, the different kinds. Whatever it is, unless it's made out of wood, those are all made out of things you can't use for schach. So the schach pasul. So does that mean that you can't put your schach directly on top of it? So does everyone here use wooden beams to hold your schach up? Yeah? Do you know? Have you been in your schach? Jeremy, what do you use to put this to hold the schach? But your parents have it. Okay. What do you? So whatever sukkah you spend your time in. There are always beams, right, that go across the sukkah and on top of the wooden beams. So that's a practicality because you go ahead and you take a mat. It's going to fall in the sukkah. So you need to put up the beams, right? But it's more than that because it could be that you're using those to support your schach. Because if you put your schach directly on top of the metal, that's a shayla. That's a shayla being mamid, your schach, with the devar and makabel tumah. So this is a very interesting issue. So that goes back to the mats that I was talking to you. Remember, I was talking to you about these mats that the Home Depot ones that are held together by these metal things, all these kinds of things. So this is a fascinating issue. Bidi Eved, Mishnah Berurah says your yotze anyway, but lechachila, it's better to avoid all these things so you don't have shaylos. But this is a fascinating issue, and there's a famous Chazon Ish about this. Can you even use metal screws and metal nails? That's a mamid of mamid. So, but this is. No, even the walls they want to know. Even the walls they want to know. Because that's mamid of mamid. You're being mamid your walls with the screws. What's holding the walls up is all the screws, otherwise the walls would fall down. So it's a very interesting issue about mamid when it comes to sukkah. So it all revolves around the sugya, and this is the starting point of the whole thing.
That's very interesting. 3 years ago, my father decided to make a very massive frame out of PVC pipes.
Mm-hmm.
So